been a long wait, ladies and gentlemen. I've debated doing this for many, many years, but it's finally time for a Mike Bond podcast. Welcome to the first episode of The Bonfire. I am your host, Mike Bond. You probably know me from years and years of covering the sport of mixed martial arts for MMA Junkie and USA Today. I've been doing that for well over a decade at this point and have seen and heard a lot of things over my years covering the sport. And I've always thought I wanted to do a podcast, but I've continued to procrastinate and put it off and never felt it was the right time or the perfect time. And I kind of just decided recently it's time to stop with the procrastinating. Let's just get this thing going and see where this journey takes us. Of course, if you are tuning into this on any platform, whether it's video, audio, it would mean the world if you could, you know, hit the like, subscribe, thumbs up, whatever it may be on the audio or video platform you're listening to. And first up on this very first episode, I hope we're bringing you guys a nice little show here. I will have former UFC light heavyweight champion Rashad Evans, UFC Hall of Famer, on to talk about the UFC 307 main event, of course, coming up this Saturday. Alex Pereira putting the belt on the line against Khalil Roundtree. In the vein of that, Rashad and I are going to give our top 10 lists of the greatest light heavyweight champions of all time, which I thought was a very fun discussion. It didn't match up all the way. We kind of had some differing opinions, and it's all leading into this massive UFC 307 main event on Saturday, where Alex Pereira can, no matter where he is on your list of best light heavyweight champions of all time, can certainly enhance his position with a victory. This is his third title defense in 175 days, which will set a new UFC record if he is able to get this done. Currently, the record for three consecutive title defenses, and not three title fight wins, period. These are title defenses, which we do not see people turning around multiple times a year very often, as Alex Pereira has done, and putting their belt on the line with so much at stake. He would do it in 175 days. Ronda Rousey's record, 189 days. So this would set a new high bar. And I think, to me, that is one of the most impressive achievements a champion, anyone in this fighter, can have. The title fight accolades, in my mind, you know, I love to cover these stats and statistics. If you've been following my career for any length of time, that'll definitely be a component of the show going forward, kind of talking about big landmark moments in the statistical side as they happen. And I discussed a bit of that with Rashad Evans as we went into our list here, and I hope you enjoy that. It was a lot of fun. And then we will talk to another UFC 307 fighter in Kayla Harrison. A lot of people believe she is the uncrowned women's bantamweight champion. She has a chance to really solidify her title shot opportunity against Ketlin Vieira on the same card where champion Raquel Pennington is putting the belt on the line against Juliana Pena. So UFC 307 shaping up to be a big one. We'll get some Kayla Harrison thoughts. She is a welcome guest on this program anytime. Go way back with Kayla, and she had a special invite towards the end of our conversation there. So you'll want to stick around for that. So here we go. The first episode of The Bonfire. Enjoy, and thank you for joining me. And the first ever guest here on the Bonfire podcast would not rather have anyone else but UFC Hall of Famer Rashad Evans. Rashad, thank you so much for doing this. Welcome, and I appreciate you joining me, man.
No problem, man. I appreciate the invite.
Yeah, of course. I've been wanting to do a podcast like this for a while, and I thought, you know, launching it this week, we have a UFC pay-per-view this weekend. It's, of course, the light heavyweight title on the line in the main event with Alex Pereira and Khalil Roundtree, and I thought, who better than Rashad? And I think we're going to talk a little bit about the division, you know, the history of it a little bit. And I told you to do some homework, and I think we're each going to give our top 10 of the best light heavyweight champions of all time. I kind of left the criteria open to interpretation, Rashad, so I'm curious to see how they match up. But first, before we get into that, I kind of want to make this a little bit of a segment on this podcast, because I've been around the sport for a very long time, man, as of you. And before I got into media, you know, I was just like a fan like many others. And I remember the first time I met you was at UFC 102 in Portland when I was just a fan. And I'm going to pull this up here so you can see this.
Oh, man. That's what's up. That's cool, man.
Yeah, so that is a very old photo. I remember my buddy and I, John, who's one of my very good friends there in that photo. You were at the team dinner, I think, right after weigh-ins. You had Keith Jardine and Nate Marquardt both fighting on that card. And we felt so rude interrupting your guys' meal, because I know it was like the post-weigh-in dinner and you had your spouses there and stuff. But you could not have been any more, you know, kind and generous with your time. You were willing to get up from your meal and take a photo. But I felt very rude interrupting.
Well, you know, I'm always thankful for the fans, you know. Without you guys, I'd just be some guy who like to fight. So,
yeah. Do you, I mean, you, you've gone to so many events, I'm sure, you know, over your lifetime, especially in the UFC as a fighter and not. Do you remember any of those like specific cards going to things? Like, do you remember that night where Keith and Nate both fought and kind of had different?
Yeah. Events? Yeah, I do remember that night. Yeah. It's crazy when that happens because, you know, you want to go and give both of them equal energy, but at the same time, you understand that, you know, somebody may need to be alone, but really not be alone, because sometimes you want to be alone and just not really talk, but you don't want to be left in your room by yourself, you know, so you just kind of hold space for people. And some people want to celebrate, but it's kind of when you're on the same team, you get that like mixed energy, you got to kind of balance it out.
Yeah. Do you romanticize about those days at all? You know, the Jackson Wink days where you guys were just like probably the best team in MMA. I mean, definitely one of the most successful. Do those like remind you of some of the best days of your career?
Yeah, I think about those times. I think about those times a bit, you know, just because it just went so fast. I remember when I was in it, you know, it just seemed like it was never going to end. And it seemed like as if, you know, we were going to fight forever. But, you know, going through that time and realizing how special it was, just from a mindset standpoint, just from where the sport was at and still a developmental stage. And there was just so much just possibility and so much of what was to come, just, you know, emanating. And when I say what is to come, I mean, we kind of felt like there was something special in the air, but nobody knew what it was. You know, you didn't know if you were going to be fighting in the UFC for another year, or you'd be having to get a job, you know, working a normal job and have to forego your fighting dream. So it was very special to be part of that time, just because of the fact that everybody was really hopeful for the UFC to take root. And then when it took root, no one knew exactly what the ceiling would be. And we thought we were going to hit the ceiling a few times, but we just kept on rising to the top.
Yeah. Do you keep close with many of those guys anymore? Like Keith and, you know, Nate and Diego and stuff like that?
Yeah, I hit them up every once in a while. You know, I speak to some more than others, but for the most part, you know, I'm always staying connected. You know, me and GSP talk quite a bit. I hit up Keith whenever I get a chance to, but you know, it's really funny because, we spent so much time together that even the time that we're apart and we don't get to talk to each other, whenever we get a chance to talk to each other, it's almost as if like we talked, you know, a few days ago, just because we have such a close bond.
Yeah, I love that. All right. That's some great reminiscing there. And I'm sure we'll reminisce a little more as we go through this list here. And there's some ties, you know, to Jackson Wink, to kind of all these little things we've been talking about. Randy Couture was in the main event of UFC 102 that I just mentioned there. So a lot to go into it. I guess we could start at the top, Rashad, because I think it's just a layup. I'd be surprised if we don't both have the same fighter as our number one. Did you even consider putting anyone other than John Jones as the number one light heavyweight champion of all time?
You know, no, I really didn't. But a lot can be said about John being number one. You know, a lot of people can say, you know, because he has blemishes on his drug testing history, you know, it doesn't really put him in there. But, you know, I give him the number one spot.
Yeah, definitely. You know? I mean, if you'd gone that direction, just like, hey, I'm leaving them all off this list entirely because of X reason, I don't think anyone would blame you. Dana White might be upset, that, especially if it's on the countless.
I know John went through his troubles and things like that, but to deny him that top spot for me is crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like he's really good.
Yeah, and I think what helps his case a lot, especially in an argument like this, like we're going to be talking about another of other names on this list, and he had the chance to beat a lot of them, right? He came in at this time where there was a rich history of the light heavyweight division, and he was able to beat a lot of those names and add to his resume, whereas like you see some of these smaller weight classes are newer divisions, it's hard to get that same clout because there's not a long history of like notable champions that you can beat and use to build on your resume.
No, you're right.
Yeah, definitely. Right. No, it's that year he had, especially in 2013, was quite incredible. So yeah, he's the number one. Hard to beat. Obviously, all his title defenses, 8 in a row, is the record for this division. And to come back and win again was a pretty big deal. I think that put the stamp on it.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that.
All right, on to number two, Rashad. I'm curious to see who you have here, because you could go a lot of different ways on this. Who do you think was your number two pick here?
I got Chuck Liddell. I put Chuck Liddell there. You know, I feel like when it came down to it, Chuck Liddell was so much for the division. You know, he was the face of it. He really went out there, and when you watched him fight live, he really did something spectacular. You know, he captivated your imagination. He terrified you. You know, when he went on his streak and he beat, Randy Couture, Babalu, Tito Ortiz, all those dudes, it was just like, you know, he arrived and it looked as if like it was automatic. You know, he was a fighter's fighter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those were the days, like, that's what really got me into the sport, honestly. Like, I remember the first pay-per-view I ever ordered with, like, friends in the basement. I was only, like, 13, 14 at the time, and that was the third Randy Couture fight. Like, the trilogy had all the build-up from the Ultimate Fighter and stuff. Like, that was one of the fights that really helped make the sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about it. Like, Chuck is just that iconic look. You know what I'm saying? He's got that iconic look, and when you see Chuck Liddell, you remember that era of MMA. You know what I'm saying? He really brings you back to that era of MMA, and he represented well.
Yep, and only three champions or four champions in the history of this weight class made it to four consecutive title defenses, and he was one of them. And you know, they obviously went a lot of different directions with it. I remember they brought in Jeremy Horn like intentionally for the just because they wanted to get that one back over on him. And they were obviously doing a lot to try to prop him up to be the guy, and he was going in there and delivering, and kind of made that sprawl and brawl style famous for what it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the all-time greats, a Hall of Famer as well with you. And of course you fought Chuck. I mean, did he still have that aura when you fought him? Did you feel like, I mean, when you guys went into that main event in Atlanta?
Yeah, he did. You know, he just came off of a great fight with Wanderlei Silva, which kind of got him back streaking again, got people back, you know, believing that he could be champion again. And, he was still hitting hard. You know, he still had that accuracy in his punch, and he still had that, you know, that tenaciousness, you know. So going into that fight, yeah, I was a bit nervous, man. I was even a little bit scared, if you ask me. it was legendary to fight him. I remember getting ready to fight him and looking across the cage and seeing his name in the banner, Chuck Liddell, Rashad Evans. Then I look over and he's doing a Chuck Liddell stretch with his leg on a cage. And I'm like, golly, that's Chuck Liddell I'm going to fight, you know, because it was a little surreal for me, being the fact that, you know, when I got into the UFC, he was the man in the UFC. And I remember telling my friends, like, yeah, I'm fighting at light heavyweight. And they were like, what? You think you can compete with Chuck Liddell? So it was like really one of those moments, like, here I am competing with Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, I mean, boy, did you ever compete with him. That was still one of the greatest knockouts this day. I remember that one so distinctly, like watching that one with friends. And when you landed that punch, I think our one side of the couch just all got up and screamed in the air and were jumping up and down. The other side of the couch just all dropped on the floor. it was just one of the cleanest punches, I think, in MMA history. And for you to go in there and essentially beat him with his signature move was pretty unreal.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Of course. Incredible. Okay. So for the record, I also have Chuck Liddell as my number two. I think that was kind of a no-brainer on my end. Number three, where do we go from here, Rashad?
Well, I think this is where we're probably going to deviate. Okay. But I went with my number three. I went with Tito Ortiz. I think the Huntington Beach bad boy, he doesn't get enough credit. And people don't give him the credit he deserves. And they forget the fact that, you know, before anybody really dominated the division, there was Tito Ortiz, and he was straight dragging people. He was the face. He was the man, you know, for the longest part. And his domination in the light heavyweight division, you know, it was something that struck fear in his opponents' hearts when they knew they had to fight him. So I gotta say, Tito Ortiz, number three.
Yeah, we actually didn't deviate. I had him there at three as well. And you know, you just look okay. at the title defenses. I mean, I think that that's a good thing that we're yeah. on track here. I mean, five consecutive yeah. title defenses, that was the standard in this division until John Jones eventually broke that, you know, more than a decade yeah. later. So he was obviously one of the foundational people. What you said about Chuck there with, you know, having the signature look and everything, he had that obviously down to a pat as well. And, you know, him and Chuck helped make magic for the sport and help grow it to where it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Yeah, no, Tito, a legend. You obviously have a long history with him as well, fought him several times. I mean, how did that compare, like, to, say, Chuck, someone that you obviously knew was that kind of guy growing up in the sport, and, you know, here you are fighting him. He was in kind of a different stage and had been through a different road, but he still had that big name. I don't know if you looked at him with the same aura as Chuck, though.
You know, I did. You know, I fought Tito Ortiz the first time, and we had some beef the first time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that kind of like, I was kind of like mad. So I kind of took him off that pedestal. But when I was fighting him, I remember feeling like, holy shit, he's a lot better than I ever thought he was. You know, he was a lot stronger. His stand up was a lot better. Like he was a man. And I remember walking out of that fight, like, oh my gosh. And here's the thing about it. Like after the first round, he was able to take me down and pretty much control me. And like going into the second round, I'm like, dude, I don't even know if I can compete with him. But somewhere through the second round, I started to believe in myself, you know. And then by the third round, I'm like, oh, I can not only compete with him, I can beat him. So during that fight, I grew up as a fighter, you know. I grew up as a fighter and just started to believe in myself in a way that I really didn't believe in myself at that time.
Yeah. So, I think the stories, you know, like that kind of went behind your guys' fights too. You know, I think like the you know, UFC 73 one, the way that played out, I think a lot of people thought that was like why we need 5-round non-title main events yeah. and like things like that, because, you know, it felt like it wasn't finished and you guys still had a lot more to give in that fight. And that's why we needed another fight after.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the fight after, though, I felt as if like I finally grew into myself. And the second time we fought, it felt like the roles were reversed. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, he knew that I was a big dog and he was trying to fight up to me. And he tried to kind of still have that same energy, like he was going to big brother me. But, you know, I had no fear. And I was very confident in myself. And I just knew at that point, I was like, I felt like if like nobody could beat me at that time.
Yeah. And when you guys had the fight at UFC 133, he did the company a huge solid, right? Because he was at 132 and at 133. Who were you supposed to fight originally on that card? It's escaping my mind. Do you remember?
Phil Davis.
Phil Davis, right.
Yeah, Phil Davis.
Yeah. And I mean, we see it kind of to this day. I'm sure we'll get to Alex Pereira at some point here, but like the guys who step up on short notice and save these cards, you know, you wouldn't have penned Tito as a guy who would do that at a point of time, just given the relationship. But I'm sure you were very grateful for him stepping up in that moment, right?
I really was, man. I really was. You know, Tito's one hell of a competitor. And, you know, he's a showman. You know what I'm saying? So he knows that, you know, you got to strike while the iron was hot, and the iron was hot for him. He just beat Ryan Bader. He had some momentum, and, you know, he almost caught me with a guillotine choke as well. So, you know, he definitely had his moments.
Yeah, for sure. All right. On to number four. Who do you got, Rashad?
My number four is going to be Daniel Cormier.
Okay.
I went with DC just because, you know, he's got the two divisional champion. And I know we're talking about light heavyweight, but we're talking about a guy in DC who, in my opinion, you know, had not Jones had any kind of special, you know, treatment, you know, or not, I can't say treatment, but any kind of help, I think DC might have beat him. You know, and I feel as if like he was a great fight with John Jones, but even, you know, therefore after, you know, there was a domination that DC had that he was, you know, clearly just, you know, head and shoulders better than the competition. And that was at a time when, you know, light heavyweight wasn't, you know, an easy division. You know what I'm saying? He made mincemeat out of Anthony Johnson. God bless his soul. And two times, and you know, twice. So, you know, DC doesn't get all the credit that he deserves at the light heavyweight division because of his the rock in his way, which is John Jones. But for me, he's definitely number four.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice there too. I mean, of course, as you laid out, there are some weirdness with his reigns. Like, you know, you don't often see like a two-time champion who won vacant belts both times, you know, like, and that was his fault though, because it was, you know, what John kind of left the division in that position, but he went out there and he fought the fights he had to and beat some really good guys. And yeah, I mean, when you defend that title and do what he did, I think that's a great choice for number four. And we're clearly on the same list. And for anyone listening and watching, me and Rashad didn't discuss our list whatsoever before this. So we said open criteria, but here we are four choices in and we're on point. So that makes me feel a little better about my my knowledge towards the sport, at least.
Or
my
opinion.
So, okay, who rounds out your top five here at number five spot?
I got to go with DC's doppelganger in Randy Couture. You know, Randy Couture is another two-divisional champion. You know, what he did at light heavyweight as well, too. You know, he was there at a time with Chuck Liddell, and he, you know, he was just so memorable and I feel like so instrumental at a time in UFC history at that division, at light heavyweight. You know, his ability to just – ragdoll you, and he wasn't the best striker, but what he was with as far as ground and pound and the patented wall and brawl he would do, it would just really annihilate his opponents. And you know, for that, I got to put him at number five.
Yeah, great choice, the natural, one of the greatest of all times, another UFC Hall of Famer. This is where we first deviate, Rashad, our first separation opinion. For number five, I put Frank Shamrock.
Okay.
You know, if they won't let him in the Hall of Fame, he's getting on this list higher for me. You know, we know like five title defenses, the inaugural champion of this weight class. I think it was 198 at the time when he was fighting, you know, pre-unified rules, but it's technically the history of the light heavyweight division. And yeah, he's the founding father, and you know, a lot of the things that you said about kind of Tito there and how he brought a different element to the sport during his time. I think Frank had a lot of people befuddled in there at his time because he was just a little bit ahead of the game in that era.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. You know, I love Frank. I feel like Frank is one of the guys who, like, when I watched and I wanted to see, you know, who has that best transitional fighting style where they're able to, you know, use the striking as well as the wrestling so fluidly. Frank was one of those guys, had a really beautiful style of fighting.
Complete facts. Okay. Number six, who do you have here?
My number six is Frank Shamrock. I got him at number six. And like you said, you know, to go on to the point that you said, you know, Frank Shamrock was that guy that, really to me, what was kind of foreshadowing what the fighters would be in the future when it comes to being able to, you know, fight smoothly from striking to wrestling to jujitsu. His transitions were sick at the time, and I feel like it kind of foreshadowed the kind of athlete that was to come in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, very well put. My number six is Alex Pereira. I kind of went into the new era here. I just think, which is crazy because he's only been the champion for like 9 months, but here he is already, you know, going for his third title defense. And I'll talk about this with another guest from UFC Stats, Michael Carroll, later in the podcast, but he is going for some history here, Rashad. It would be his third title defense in 175 days, which would shatter the record Ronda Rousey currently holds with three title defenses in 189 days. So he'll be doing it 2 weeks faster, which is pretty crazy to see, you know, especially in this modern era.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like Alex Pereira, man. I think that he's one of the guys that, you know, to me is truly cut from the cloth of yesteryear when it comes to light heavyweight. It's just his mindset when it doesn't, you know, it's not about, you know, who I'm going to fight. He's down to fight everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll talk about a little bit more about him to the end of the segment here when we just preview that main event. But yeah, who did you have at your number six or number seven rather?
I had Lyoto Machida. You know, felt like Machida was one of the best in the era. You know, during my era, and one thing that I really stands out for me as Machida was the fact that, you know, he had a style that really hasn't been seen in the UFC up until that point, you know, just that really throwback to, you know, discipline versus discipline with martial arts. You know, you went with a wrestler, you went with a guy who was a boxer, but you know, he was a karate guy and he made karate cool. He made karate effective up until then. It was like, oh, you take karate, that don't work in a fight. And then Lyoto Machida went and showed you that not only does it work in a fight, that everybody should be doing goddamn karate.
Did you only have that revelation after you fought him, or when you went into that fight, were you still having some skepticism about his style?
Well, I knew in going into that fight that he had a crazy style. You know, we're going to try to do some things, jam up his karate style, but going in there and facing it and feeling it firsthand, I'm just like, yeah, karate's effective.
No doubt. Yeah, it's a great choice. We'll talk a little bit more about that fight more in a moment. But my number seven, I had Quinton Jackson. I just think, Rampage, he obviously didn't have the longest reign in the world, but the one defense I think was quite meaningful against Dan Henderson. They kind of did that pride title unification fight, even though it wasn't really a unification fight, but Henderson was the champion at the time and it worked out. It was a great selling point. And that's an awesomely underrated fight, I think, between those two that we had. It's a great five rounder. So, yeah, I think, you know, Rampage's time on top wasn't too long, but I think what he did, you know, in winning the belt obviously against Chuck was a huge moment, and then that defense to kind of bring the UFC and Pride together was a special moment in our sport as well.
Yeah, I agree. Rampage is he's the man.
Yeah, and on to your number eight. Who do you got?
My number eight is Alex Pereira, and I wanted to put him sooner, but here's the thing about it: I feel as if like, this era of light heavyweights isn't what it once was. You know, I'm not saying that it's weak, but it's just not the strongest that it's been. And I don't say that to, you know, to really throw shade on Alex, but I mean, I just need to see more from him, you know, as far as when it comes to being all timeless. I feel like right now his legacy is on a trajectory to, you know, to if he can make it past, you know, this next one, you know what I'm saying? Then yeah, I would definitely put him, you know, within the top five, right? I can definitely put him in the top five, but I feel like there still needs to be, I still need to see more. I still need to be able to believe that, you know, he can go in there with a skilled grappler and not only, you know, stand up to the grappling challenges, but then able to impose his will. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like he's got a lot of good momentum, but I feel like in order to be an all-time, I feel like you need a little bit more than momentum.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I think the only reason I had him a little bit higher was just, you know, like he did log the actual title defenses, and they seemingly happened under super unideal circumstances, short notice both times. I think for the one at 303, he said, you know, he had like hurt his toe and then stepped in for Conor McGregor, who had also hurt his toe. So like there was a whole element of him doing this seemingly when it's like not perfect or an appropriate camp or something. And that seems to be the best. But I think in the vein of what you're saying, like, if he wins this fight against Khalil Roundtree and then he fights Magomed Ankalaev, who everyone seems to think is like the worst style matchup possible for him, if he wins that one, does that like basically tick the boxes that you just explained there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I want to see. You know, I feel like he's really taken some fights that really just benefit his style. You know what I'm saying? I want to see him go against a Magomed Ankalaev and see like, really what we're dealing with. But I mean, already I can't say that, you know, he's done something amazing right now. Already he's done something amazing, and the fact that he keeps putting himself on the line, that really puts him in up another notch in my belt. So
for sure. My number eight was Lyoto Machida. So I think we're kind of, we touched on him well there, of course, you know, great win. It wasn't too long of a reign. And, you know, you could argue you should have lost it in the first defense against Shogun, but, you know, got that decision and we saw what happened in the rematch. But of course, he's had his time there. And okay, on to your number nine. Who did you select here?
You know, I got to give it to one of my favorites to watch when he was in Pride. Just who he was at light heavyweight, and I got to go with Shogun Hua. I mean, you know, it's easy to overlook Shogun because in the UFC he wasn't, you know, what he was in Pride. Now, granted, in the UFC he done some work. You know what I'm saying? He had a great trilogy with Machida, and that was a great, exciting series of fights. He's put on some great fights in the UFC, but I feel like when I'm looking and I'm putting, you know, Shogun on the all time, I'm really putting him on an all time for just who he was when he fought at Pride and things like that, you know, because at Pride, he was the scariest man ever. You know what I'm saying? He was just absolutely phenomenal. He had a perfect marriage of violence, of patience, and just, you know, just brilliance inside that cage, to be honest.
Yeah, he was unreal. I think he was my first favorite fighter in MMA, like as a fan, that really got me in that 2005 run in Pride, the Grand Prix, arguably the greatest single year for an MMA fighter ever. So yeah, he is a great choice. I think it's always disappointing when you look at the UFC run, you're like, this could have been more. And I asked him at the Hall of Fame over the summer when he came in, I'm like, so like, how injured were you really? Like, you can be honest, you're retired now. And he's like, I was a disaster for every single fight. So that's just, I just think of like what could have been. But yeah, of course,
yeah.
One of the true legends of the sport. Do you feel like that's one of the fights that, like, during your era kind of got away?
Yeah, I was supposed to fight him a couple of times and it just never ended up happening. You know, I would have loved to fight Shogun. You know, some fights that it just get up for in a different kind of way. You know, it's a perfect marriage of being, you know, scared half to death and just really confident and really just you know, want to test your skills. And then I was in that place where I'm like, dude, I really would love to fight him for like a legacy.
Yeah, for sure. No, that would have been a great one. Okay, for my number nine, I have you, Mr. Rashad Evans. You're number nine on the list. Yeah, I put you on there. I thought, you know, you were more than a fair choice. I mean, your title win at UFC 92, the ultimate 2008. I wish we could get back to naming events like that. That was a good time. But yeah, I mean, you versus Forrest. I think that was the first title fight between Ultimate Fighter winners ever at the time. Yeah. So like a historic nature to it. I know the reign didn't last long. I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings with this, but I think in terms of days, it was the shortest, like overall.
Yeah.
But that's because they want to turn you around real quick, right? Like, was there ever?
Yeah.
You see champions now, they win the belt, they get surgery or something they've been putting off and they're gone for a while. Was there ever a thought of, like, you know, taking a long break after you won the belt, or how did that come together that they got you back in there so quick?
Yeah, you know, I just didn't, I really didn't know what I was, you know, I was really fighting from the wrong place, you know what I'm saying? Like, even when going into that fight, I had so many fights in a row and I was already tired from having the crazy 2008, you know what I'm saying? I really needed to take a break and some time off, but they just kept putting me in there, and the way I was looking at fighting, I was like, you know what, one day this is going to end, so I want to make the most out of it. And me trying to seize every opportunity I got ended up, you know, getting me in the end. So I felt as if, like, yeah, I should have took some time off, but I didn't, and I ended up, you know, paying the consequence for it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge fight between you two at the time. I think also one of the first of undefeated fighters in, like, a title fight. Yeah. Between you guys. So yeah, that was historic, and I imagine that would have been hard to turn down, especially when you're the champion and UFC was on fire then. I'm sure the pay-per-view points weren't terrible at that point.
Nah, it wasn't and it was an opportunity that I just wish I would have just waited a little bit, because, you know, there's a hunger for fighting, and if that hunger is satiated, then you're not going to be as ferocious as you need to be out there. And I was one of those athletes who needed to have a break away from it sometimes so I can miss it and then come back hungrier.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it says a lot about you. How many people on this damn list have you fought? Pretty much everyone. So I think that says a lot about, you know, what you did here. Okay, round it out. Well, bring it in for us, Rashad, here. Who is your number 10 choice?
I got to go with Glover Teixeira, man. I got to go with Glover Teixeira. You know, I felt, you know, when he was able to do it, and the way he was able to do it, to me, was very impressive. I really was impressed with just, you know, being one of the oldest champions out there and how he adjusted his game from being a guy who was standing, trade and bang, to somebody who started leaning more on his grappling and really starting to, you know, evolve his game. And despite, you know, having taken so many, been through so many wars, he finished out pretty good. And, you know, for me, I love to watch Glover fight. So, yeah, I got to give it to Glover.
Yeah, of course. I believe he was the oldest champion in the history of the weight class, too. Maybe yeah. Tour had him beat. It was close. He might have actually done it, at least for his first title win. So that's pretty remarkable. And his legacy is almost folded into Alex Pereira in a way now, considering he's just like in the
right.
corner. He's always there. So he's carrying it on. Yeah, I think that's a great choice. My number 10 was Randy Couture. So, you know, you had him a little bit higher, but he's definitely got him.
Yeah.
No doubt. I think it's just the, you know, struggles to get the title defenses and stuff. And, you know, the weird moment with Vitor Belfort and the cut island, just all that stuff. His title reign was a little strange, but doing it twice was obviously remarkable for him. So he rounds out the top 10 for me.
Yeah.
Just to ask, Rashad, who was your first out? If you had to go 11, who would it have been?
You know, I don't know. You know, here's the thing. Like, I didn't rank myself. And I didn't want to rank myself on purpose just because of the fact that, you know, I really wanted to really look at some of the other guys on there. But I would say if I was to give another ranking to somebody else on that list, let's see, who else is on that list?
Ones you left out aside from yourself were Jan Blachowicz, Forrest Griffin, Jamal Hill.
Oh, Vitor without Paul, a doubt.
Yuri Prochazka.
I would say without a doubt, Forrest Griffin. I would say Forrest Griffin. Forrest is one of those guys that it was hard to keep off the list just because of what Forrest really meant to the UFC and how, you know, that fight with Stephen Bonner, you know, that can't be overstated enough. And when it's put into perspective from Dana White and Zuffa and those guys, you really understand what a pivotal point that was for the UFC, being able to say, you know what, we're going to be able to keep on going, or we may have to fold up shop. So you got to give it to Forrest.
Absolutely. No, great choice for sure. And again, as I said earlier, you fought so many of these guys. So I think that just needs to put more respect on your career. All right, Rashad, that puts a nice bow on it. I thought that was a lot of fun. Just before I get you out of here, of course, we do have UFC 307 this weekend. And in the main event, Alex Pereira against Khalil Roundtree. I think a lot of people were surprised by this fight, just given Roundtree's number 8 ranking. Yeah. But on paper, it looks like an absolute blast. And you have these guys out here saying, like, you know, come out publicly and say the first person to shoot a takedown has to donate some of their purse to charity. And like, we're getting this whole, you know, striking only gentleman's agreement type of vibe. What do you just think of this matchup? Do you think, you know, that's how it plays out all on the feed? Or what are your expectations for Saturday?
You know, I think it plays out on his feet, and I feel like, you know, for sure it's going to be like that on Alex's end. But I feel like because of Alex brings the challenge that he does bring, and Khalil's been working on his stand-up, and he's been going out to Thailand, and he's been really priding himself with his stand-up, I feel like he's going to test it. And it may be to his own detriment, but I feel like that's where he wants to go with it. You know what I'm saying? That's the hill he's going to die on. So he's going to stand and strike. But what I feel will probably be better for him is a mix of two. You know, I feel like, you know, being able to strike, but then at the same time, utilize your clinching, utilize the grappling positions. So not only does it zap some of that strength and some of that explosiveness and some of that power out of Pereira, but it also, you know, it frustrates him. You know what I'm saying? If I can hit you and then before you get a chance to hit me, I'm getting you to wrestle. Then after a while, that throws off your timing. That does a lot of different things. And you know, it's about fighting smart. When you fight smart, you don't fight with an ego. You can choose the most effective game plan for your opponent. And I feel like if Khalil's going to win this fight, yeah, I would definitely tell Alex that, you know, it's a striking only event. But I'm definitely going to wrestle.
I don't know. Something just, I'm not, you know, making this an official Khalil Roundtree prediction or something, but it just always feels weird, these fights that come together, that maybe it's not the fight that was supposed to be made, but done just because they needed a date. And then, you know, Alex Pereira's out here talking about he wants to fight for a boxing heavyweight title and, you know, maybe move to heavyweight in the UFC. It just seems like everything is being talked about except for the fight itself. And I feel like that's almost like a trap fight. And you see in these situations when the guys lose when you don't expect them to.
And that's what I can definitely say too. And I actually had a similar feeling too because of the fact that Khalil's kind of slipping under the radar, and Khalil is sneaky good, and you people are like, how is he sneaky good? Is because I see that he's good, But as you can see, there are some holes, right? There's some holes that can be exploited. There's some holes, and we've seen holes before in this game when he's lost. So you still feel like those holes are there, but I feel the Khalil that we knew that made those mistakes is a different Khalil than we're seeing right now. I feel like the Khalil that we have right now is a much more confident Khalil, a fighter who really knows his game and really has taken the time to perfect his style himself. And there's a difference from when you're trying to put tools in your toolbox to organizing, you know, what tools to use and what tools suits you best and when's the best time to use it. And I feel like Khalil is at that level right now.
For sure. So what are you thinking? Are we picking the upset here, or are we going to stick with
I'm picking the upset. I feel like, like you said, man, when you start rubbernecking and you start looking at all these other opportunities and when the money starts coming in easy and, you know, who else knows what's going on? I know there was a little situation outside the Octagon for Alex not too long ago. So who knows what shook up out of that and really what that is foretelling too. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's a lot of things that can be said, a lot of things that can be assumed. But ultimately speaking, I feel like when a fighter starts to look beyond what's already in front of them, I feel like it could be a recipe for an upset.
For sure. That's great analysis. And Rashad, you do great analysis all the time. Do you have anything coming up in terms of like assignments on the UFC desk or anything? What do you kind of got coming up in the next bit here?
I'll be on the desk again in November. You know, I've been doing some things with the family and just, you know, doing other things outside of fighting. So, you know, you can catch me on the Fight Guys on Bet Online. You can go to YouTube and check it out. I got a weekly show that I do on there with this guy named Mystic Zach. And we just break down the fights, you know, have a good time.
Love it, Rashad. Well, as I said off the top, I wouldn't be happier to have anyone else than a UFC Hall of Famer, a great guy like yourself on as my first guest. So really appreciate you being here and doing this. And it means a lot to me, man.
No problem, man. Take care.
All right. Thank you. And we'll be back with more after the break. Joining me now is the UFC contender, Kayla Harrison. Her second fight coming up, UFC 307 on Saturday against Ketlin Vieira. And Kayla, this is fight number two. I see you're already well adjusted up there in Salt Lake. How's it been up there so far?
Oh, it's been really good. Honestly, I don't remember the last time I saw fall colors. So we came out 2 weeks ahead of the fight just to acclimate to the altitude. And it's been beautiful. We've been going on some crazy hikes and training's been awesome. It's been fun. Like my whole team is here. Uno tournaments, Liar's Dice game, you know, just living the dream, man. Living the dream.
Yeah. And I know like some of these guys on your team did this last year with Dustin Poirier as well. And, you know, everyone seems to have their own approach to fighting up there. Like I talked to Juliana Pena a couple of days ago. She was still at home. I see like Carla Esparza is just flying out today. Mm-hmm. I think anyone who's not there already or hasn't been preparing is making a mistake.
I mean, I think it's personal preference. You know, I borrowed Dustin's altitude tent and I was sleeping in an altitude tent before I came out here. I feel like I've adjusted really well. Honestly, I think I was made for the mountains. I'm not made for the swamp. I'm made for the mountains, but it's personal preference. You know, yeah. I don't put too much weight into all that stuff. Like it is what it is.
Yeah. And I mean, Dustin, obviously that fight didn't go his way, but he's like, I didn't fight long enough to even know.
I know. I was asking him, I was like, do you think the altitude tent helped? And he was like, well, Kayla, I didn't really get a chance to find out. And I was like, fuck, I shouldn't have asked that.
Whoops. All good. Well, I'm hoping you're expecting to not worry about it on the positive end of it, right?
That's right, baby.
Quickly. Yeah. This seems like a nice setup. I know you said when we talked like in Vegas over the summer, you're like, UFC has a plan for me and I trust them in it. Was this kind of what you envisioned if it wasn't going to be the title shot, like this perfectly positioned almost four-woman tournament here?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm still the new kid on the block. I'm not in a position to demand or call for anything. So, but I believe in my performance is and performances to come. I believe in my training. I believe in my team. And I know that it's only a matter of time before I'm UFC champion. So, you know, Saturday night, just another step on the way to that goal.
Yeah, and Ketlin, I think, has been in this situation a few times, like where she's got right to the cusp of it, and then she hasn't been able to get over. That's why she hasn't fought for the belt yet. But she's been in the top three for years at this point. In terms of like her, you know, the challenge she brings, do you think this is a moment where she just, I don't know, she can't get over that hump when she meets a fighter that's just quite there? Or what do you kind of see in her that has not allowed her to reach probably what her goals are?
I mean, I don't really think, I don't spend too much time thinking about that. I just focus on myself. I focus on my training, my game plan, you know, what I want to do on fight night. She's a good fighter. She's very good. She's well-rounded. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's a mental block, or maybe it's just really tough opponents. She's not quite at that level. I'm not sure, but she's a good fighter. She's dangerous, and that's why we have fights, to see what's going to happen. But Saturday night's my night.
Yeah. How much better do you feel at this point in the week than you did at 300 in terms of just like the physical preparedness for the cut and everything?
Yeah, it's a different kind of nerves this time, I think. Like before it was, oh my God, can I do this? And now it's like the anticipation of, oh my God, I have to do this.
Yeah, right.
But I feel great. You know, I feel my energy levels are still high. My training has been great. I'm peaking. I trust the process. I trust my team. I know I'm in good hands. And I've really just surrendered to the fact that, like, you know, the things that we put value on in life oftentimes require a lot of sacrifice and a lot of effort to get. So.
Yeah. All right. Is it going to be like a rule now that for all your fights, you need to be on the same card as Alex Pereira? Is that like,
oh my God,
words now?
I know. What the hell? Like, no, that's not going to, no, because he always gets a knockout and then like steals the show. So I'm like, right. No, you stay over there. Let me steal the show. But no, it's great to be on the same card as him. Obviously, he has great energy. He has such an aura about him. We've become friends. And I really, his team is awesome. So it's for me another honor to be on the same card as him, and to just be fighting in the UFC and chasing my dreams alongside these amazing competitors. It's, dude, my life is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, all the people you fought on 300 with, and you look at this card, you got Aldo, Pereira.
I know.
I know we haven't gotten fully into fight week yet, but I'm sure again, when you're sitting up on that press conference stage and stuff.
Sorry, Sid, hang on. Say that again.
No, I was just going to say, like, when you're sitting on that press conference stage, where, like, at 300 now this, you have all these legends. It must just be, like, surreal.
No, it is surreal. And I, like, I'm even, you know, I'm quite shocked at my placement on the card. Like, yeah. I mean, just because, like, look, like, you've got Aldo, you've got Wonder Boy, you've got all these, you know, absolute studs. And I'm honored, but, you know, I'd be okay if I was the first fight of the night. Like, it's not a big deal to me. And I don't get to choose where I'm at in the card, but I feel like those guys deserve the respect, you know, like I respect them a lot and I look up to some of them. So I'm like, oh, okay.
But it's a good thing, right? It shows what they think of you and what
it is. It's just an honor. But I'm like, I didn't do it.
Yeah. We just need Aldo to have like a full decision fight so you can get through your media and get like cage side, right?
For exactly. The hope. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you think they'll like bring you into the cage, that type of stuff? Or you've done all that in PFL. Do you not want to do that again?
I hope so. Yeah. I would love that. But again, I don't make those decisions, way above my pay grade. I just got to go out there and smash. And then, the rest will work itself out.
Yeah. I talked to Raquel Pennington the other day, and she said she was like so concerned Juliana might pull out of this fight at some point that she pretty much split her camp like 50-50 for you and for Juliana. Like, she's like, even at this point, like, I'm ready for Kayla if something happens this week.
Really? So,
I guess that's nice to hear, right? Because I know you said I'll step in there any second, but it seems 100%. Like
out of the Dude, coin. It's so weird. I have a vibe too that like something's getting, like, I'm mentally prepared to make 135 pounds because that's funny that she said that. I have a vibe too. So, I'm ready for her or Juliana or Caitlin or all three of them. Like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
This is my time.
Would plan A be, though, just for everything to go as it's set up for? I mean, or is that, like, chaos of changing all these different things? Would that be a lot to go through on fight week?
It's a fight game, right? Like, chaos is where we thrive. And yeah. I spent most of my career, you know, having multiple judo matches in a day. And you never know. Like, you get the draw, but then you don't know who's going to win or who's going to lose or what's going to. And, like, you can make guesses, but it never goes how you think it's going to go. So I'm prepared for everything. And, yeah, I've just accepted, like, whatever is going to be is going to be. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, just a couple last things, Holly Holm has talked a bit about, like, your guys' fight, and she said it was the worst performance of her career and all these different things. When you look at that, is that just her trying to kind of cope with the loss? Or when you look back, do you feel like, I don't know, maybe she performed differently than even you thought she would?
I mean, she definitely, I believe, I'm not, you know, I'm not a part of her camp, but I believe that probably wasn't the game plan. I'm sure the game plan was to use her footwork and to maintain distance and to just chip away at me. So yeah. And listen, like, we're all human. We all have off nights. God knows I've had mine, you know, lost out on $1 million on an off night. So I get it. All we have, you know, failure is our fuel. We pick ourselves back up and we get back in there and try again. Yeah. Maybe it was just my night.
Yeah. How many times are you going to get called out this month? We got the PFL pay-per-view coming out. We got this card. It seems like you're going to be in the news for weeks on end here.
I'm the woman of the hour.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, it's, yeah, whatever. I mean, you know, there's always a lot of talking, but I prefer to just do.
Yeah. Well, you're always making the big headlines, and that's why I had to have you as one of my first guests.
I'm so honored.
On fire.
Thank you.
It means a lot. I mean, when they presented the chance to talk to you, I was like, this seems like too good of a fit. We go way back, and
yes,
it's a great honor to have you here. So,
no, thank you so much. We're going to have a real bonfire sometime.
Yes, like, we will. Maybe we'll get down there to South Florida. You can show me your fire pit. We'll see some training. I think this is a good plan for the title fight camp. How about that?
I'm down. You're coming out for the title fight camp. You're coming down. You're going to have a bonfire with me. We're just gonna chat.
All right, I love this idea. This sounds great. Okay, thank you so much, Kayla. I know you got a crazy week ahead, and best of luck. Looking forward to seeing you shine once again.
Yes, thank you so much, Mike. Talk to you soon.
And that does it for the conversations on the first episode here of The Bonfire with Mike Bond. Thank you so much to Rashad Evans and Kayla Harrison for their time. I hope you enjoyed those chats. I know it was somewhat brief with Kayla, but this is what happens when you get thrown time on a fight week. The media is endless for these fighters, so I try not to keep them too long, but I thought the chat with Rashad is there. I would love to know what you guys think of our rankings, how yours stack up, where do we get it right, where do we get it wrong. Light heavyweight, of course, one of the most storied weight classes in the history of mixed martial arts, and especially the UFC, and Alex Pereira, a very strong chance to really put himself in a historic spot with a victory, as we discussed earlier. So I thought that was a lot of fun. I appreciate anyone who stuck with me all the way till this point, and hopefully many more of these to come on The Bonfire. And hopefully this is the beginning of something fun here, something special. Appreciate anyone who's here from day one following along and supporting the show. I have high hopes for it, and I'd love for you all to be here for the ride. So thank you for tuning in to the inaugural episode here of The Bonfire, and I will see you guys next time.